The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk 1240 on a Sunday night, July 31st, in a stormy southern part of Long Island. I am your host, Paul Spiteri, with Brian on the other side of the glass and our producer, Rob Paul. Welcome to the show tonight. We'll bring you 2 hours of sports talk. I will take you through the first hour tonight, and we're going to talk some baseball and football. Obviously, a lot to talk about on both fronts. Baseball trade deadline. Let's talk deals. Are the Yankees done? Well, I'm certainly glad they've been trading. They made some great moves, and I think Brian Cashman's doing the right thing. And the Mets, well, hopefully they'll surprise us. I don't know what to think of the Mets. Another injury today with Drubal Cabrera going down. I don't know, Met fans might be queuing up the Titanic song soon. Football camps are open. And to me personally, there is balance in the universe that football is back. And listen, everybody, you want to call in, 631-888-8811. Again, 631-888-8811. And in the second half hour of my show, I'll be welcoming somebody I grew up watching and admiring his play from afar in Queens, New York, former Denver Broncos All-Pro middle linebacker Carl Mecklenburg will be joining me at the 8:30 hour. We're going to talk to Carl about his career, what he's up to, pretty dynamic guy, and see what he thinks about the NFL this season and preview of the defending Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos. Again, anybody want to call in, talk any sports to me, baseball and football tonight, we can put hockey and basketball on the shelf. I think it's not that time of year yet. 631-888-8811. But before I get started, let me thank my sponsor, CJA Luxury Transportation, for all your transportation needs. Call CJA Luxury Transportation, airports, trips into the city, trips to the wineries, all luxury vehicles at taxi cab prices. Call the owner, Craig. Great guy, reliable. I've mentioned before all my trips to him. Really good. Give him a call, 516-557-7991. Again, 516-557-7991, CJA Luxury Transportation. Please give him a call and use him for anything that you're looking to do in terms of transportation. Great guy and reliable. Let's start out tonight, folks. Talk about the Mets. So, Neil Walker, did he save the season with that bomb today? I don't know. But, you know, guys, I'm getting a little bit of an uneasy feeling with the New York Mets. It's very hard to put your finger on what's going to happen with this team. I think injuries are really, you know, getting to a point now where you really got to wonder what kind of team we're going to see on the field every day. You know, you look at Yoenis Cespedes clearly out again. He's not right. He hasn't hit for a couple of weeks, and you know he's a much better hitter than what he's been showing. He's had a couple of nights where he had a couple of home runs, but something's clearly not right. I think that, you know, Sandy Alderson, he's got some decisions to make in the next 24 hours. You know, personally, I don't know if this is the roster. I would go all out and trade any of my young talent that I have in the system, like Rosario or Dominic Smith, and try to get some guys. But, you know, you never know. A player or two can turn this around. I've been tweeting consistently. I'd love to see Jay Bruce, and I'm a big Joey Votto guy. I'm sure I'm dreaming, but it certainly would be nice to see a couple of bats come to Citi Field by tomorrow. But, you know, I think that there's a lot of issues with this ball club right now. A couple of things I noticed in doing some homework for the show tonight. Do you know the Mets' leading stolen base guy? Actually, he's on the DL now. Juan Lagares, 4 stolen bases, leads the team. That is something quite wrong in your offense, I feel, where you don't have enough guys. And obviously, they probably brought Reyes back to do this, but clearly Jose's hurt again. No surprise there. But 4 steals is not a lot of dynamic speed or kind of disruption in this lineup. I mean, it's been well documented. Obviously, it's a home run hitting team when they're hitting them. The averages aren't great. I mean, you look at these stats. I'm looking, you know, Granison, 236 as of yesterday. Darno, 238. Walker, 253. Cabrera, 257. I mean, it really, you know, it kind of scares me when I look at James Loney, you know, our 50 games as a Met, second best hitter at 288. You know, I just, you look at this offense, and they're really not going to scare anybody. And I think it's really a difficult spot for Sandy to be in. Sure, 2.5 games out of a wild card. But is this roster the type of team that is going to make a run? It's hard to say. You know, and from a pitching perspective, you know, Syndergaard, Mats, we got DeGrom has probably been the healthiest of them all. You know, Noah Syndergaard's not as dominating as he's been. I mean, he's getting hit a little bit. Obviously, you know, him a little bit is still, you know, top of the notch in the major leagues. But I think that there's some real issues in this baseball team. And it'll be interesting to see what Sandy does. Listen, I have absolute full faith in Sandy. Also, I think he's a great general manager. He's done great things for this team. The owners have showed patience with him. He's turned this thing around. They're a relevant baseball team again. I have no issues with Sandy Alderson. I have no issues with Terry Collins. You know, people complain, oh, he left Familia in, you know, put him in an extra game. You know what? Terry Collins done a great job with this team, and you can't argue with the things that he does. You know, some managers make some decisions that you're always going to question. But at the end of the day, Terry Collins has to fill out the lineup with the guys that he has, and he's got some real challenges, right, on this roster with injuries. So I'm a big supporter of the Mets front office with Alderson and Collins. They're doing the best that they can. And listen, if they bring something in terms of helping the offense, it'd be great. But, you know, Drubal Cabrera went down today, and it doesn't sound good, folks. Sounds like he could be done for the year. So you lose him. Now you put Wilmer over at short. You know, listen, let's not forget Wilmer's defense at shortstop. You know, that certainly is something to be concerned at. I think, you know, Wilmer will hit enough at short, but, you know, the defense will struggle with him. You know, Walker's an okay second baseman. So you got some range issues there. You're still now at third base with Reyes going down. You know, you're sticking guys like Kelly Johnson at third base. I mean, yeah, folks, you look at this lineup, and it's really starting to worry me a bit. So I think we're in a very interesting position with the Mets. You know, I don't know if I'd be upset if they don't make any moves tomorrow, or I'd be thrilled based on what they bring in. It really is to be determined what Sandy does. But I don't know, folks. I'm starting to feel like this may not be the year for the Mets. I think that, you know, they're really on some hard times. And listen, for next year, I'd like to see a couple of things. I Curtis Granderson, you know, again, from a personal perspective, like a great guy, does great stuff for the community. 16 home runs, 29 RBIs, 236. I think it's time to move on from Curtis Granderson. It's just not there. And I think, you know, you can't hide those type of stats when the rest of your team is struggling. And I think that, you know, you got to look at some other guys next year. You know, Duda's a free agent. You know, David Wright, you know, will he be coming back? Who knows? And I think the one guy that's really disappointed, you know, I think he'd be a great hitter, but is Michael Conforto. I mean, the Mets were relying on this kid to really step up and be an integral part of the offense. As of yesterday, 10 homers, 30 ribbies, 225, and he hit most of those 10 home runs before Memorial Day. Yeah, so he is probably the one bat that had he stepped up and maybe progressed the way that everyone thought he would, maybe, you know, the damage wouldn't be so bad to the offense. But, you know, he really has not stepped up, and I think it's cost the Mets. Again, folks, you want to call in 631-888-8811 is the call-in. Feel free to call in. On the pitching side, you know, I think we're being optimistic that Mattson and Syndergaard, there's not something deeper in terms of injuries. I mean, you know, maybe they're okay. It's, you know, these guys throw a lot of pitches all year. It's tough, but, you know, the distance isn't there as much. I mean, Mattson is a tough kid. I think he's a great pitcher. Hopefully he has health. And, you know, obviously Syndergaard's fantastic too. And, you know, hopefully he's got nothing on the horizon in terms of injuries. DeGrom's been fantastic. Bullpen-wise, listen, you know, they're looking for bullpen help, but at the end of the day, I think they could three guys have pitched great for them. Familia's pitched great. A couple of tough starts, but, you know, couple of jobs closing. He obviously lost the game the other day. He has put a couple of guys on base, I think, which has hurt him. But Blevins has been great, and Addison Reed has been great. I mean, Addison Reed, you know, a couple of years ago was sporting, you know, 5.5 ERAs, and he's come in and done great. I mean, obviously, the Antonio Bastardo era hopefully will end mercifully at the end of September. He's been nothing short of brutal for this baseball club. And when you look at the National League guys, I think at the end of the day, you know, listen, obviously I'm happy the Mets beat the Cubs last year. It's hard to root against the Cubs, right? If the Mets aren't involved, I don't know how you can root against the Cubs anymore. I mean, that franchise has been through so much. Good for Theo Epstein getting Aroldis Chapman. That was, to me, is an absolutely unbelievable move. Sure, he gave up a prospect. That guy knows how to bring prospects in. He has stacked that team with a tremendous amount of talent. He goes out and gets the most dominant reliever in the major leagues. Of course, he blew a save shortly thereafter, but we all know how good Aroldis Chapman is. And listen, I think it would be absolutely wonderful to see the Cubs win a World Series for that fan base and for that city, which would absolutely go bananas if they win it. But the Cubs have some competition in the National League, right? I mean, I still think the Cubs are not without flaws. You know, they have some great offense, but, you know, I think they have some pitching that can be hit. I mean, Arrieta is a great pitcher, but, you know, he can be hit. So can Lester. I'm not a big fan of Lack and the other guys at the back end of that rotation, but you look at the Nationals, Again, what do the Nationals have to do? Shore up their bullpen. They go out and get Mark Melancon from Pittsburgh, which is a great move. Melancon's a very steady closer. He's not going to blow you away with 97-mile fastballs, but he knows how to get you through the ninth inning. It was a great move by Washington. They obviously have Strasburg and Scherzer. If those two guys are healthy and they're pitching in your playoffs, you know, you've got a great chance to win any series. I mean, Scherzer and Strasburg are just unbelievable to have those two guys on the same team. Obviously, you know, we are fortunate to have that kind of pitching at Citi Field, but those two guys are really, really lights out. You know, they may need another mid reliever. You know, they have Roark on the end of rotation. Has been good. Joe Ross coming back. I like the Nationals, too. I think the Nationals can give the Cubs a run for their money. You know, Bryce Harper has kind of slipped off, but, you know, he's still a fantastic talent. And listen, folks, you know, back to the Mets. Is one guy in the Nationals who I think we'd all want back, and we all look at the success the Mets had last year, was Daniel Murphy. Daniel Murphy is absolutely stinging the ball yet again. What a move for the Nationals picking him up. I think the Mets are really missing him. I think Yoenis Cespedes has been missing him, having him the protection lineup with Murphy. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think the Nationals have a lot of tools. They have a great hitting catcher. They got this kid, Trey Turner, they've called up, who's been a fantastic addition. He can really run and play the game. So I think at the end of the day, the Nationals is something to worry about. And the rest of the National League, you know, the West, you're going to probably have the Giants or the Dodgers win that division, right? I think that can go either way. I mean, I kind of like the Giants a little bit more. I think they have a great coach with Boce. I think they're not done making moves either. But, you know, then you look at the wild card. You have either the Giants or the Dodgers in the mix, the Cardinals, the Marlins, the Mets, and the Pirates. And, you know, the Cardinals are a good team. They're solid. You know, they don't blow you away with any, you know, specific thing. They just play good baseball. They came in and gave the Mets a hard time, as always. They're just a solid team that will not go away. And I think, you know, they have some injuries, that some guys like Matt Carpenter coming back. And then there's the Miami Marlins. And listen, you know, of course, they're a rival of the Mets. They're in a division. You got to love Don Mattingly. I mean, if you're a New Yorker, Yankee fan or Met fan, Don Mattingly just signifies class and success. And look, he's took that team and made them a contender. You know, they're right there for the wild card. They have a great, great outfield. Ozuna, Yelich, and Stanton. You know, Stanton's had a down year, but I still wouldn't want to be facing him. Some of you watch the game have watched what Mike Stanton has done to Met pitching. It's quite scary. I mean, I've seen, you know, talk about, you know, Mike Piazza retiring this weekend, and, you know, I've gone to Met games, you know, as a kid and young adult, and, you know, the ball came off of Mike Piazza's bat differently than everyone else. I mean, he would just sting the ball, and I remember sitting down in the box seats one day with a friend of mine who was fortunate to get seats from a customer. And Piazza just hit the ball, and you would just think, wow, like, where'd that come from? Giancarlo Stanton is similar to that. He absolutely just hits laser beams, and, you know, if he ever really puts it all together, that guy could absolutely do damage to any pitcher. So I'm a fan of the Marlins offense. They have, you know, Realmuto's a great catcher. They have some other good talent around the team. Yeah, the thing for them is pitching. You know, Jose Fernandez is phenomenal. He's one of your top probably five pitchers in the major leagues. They made the move for Cashner. Yeah, I'm not a huge Cashner guy. He pitched well today. They beat the Cardinals. I don't think he got the win because it came later. But, you know, Cashner is hot and cold. I've seen him get bombed plenty of times. He threw well today. We'll see how that works out, and see if the Marlins can make any other moves. They also have some decent guys in the pen. They got, you know, Rodney in a deal recently. They got Phelps back there, and you got A.J. Ramos. So, you know, they have some talent. I don't think they're going away. I hate to say, they're healthier than the Mets. I think they have a better chance of going further if they can stay healthy, because the Mets right now are really struggling with health. And I also think when you look at the Dodgers, you know, the Dodgers, one thing, they have owners that spend money like drunken sailors. And I've heard about Chris Archer going there. You read a lot of, you know, rumors about this guy and that guy. You know, they're always making noise. You know, and be shocked to see Jay Bruce playing right field for them Tuesday night. So, you know, they're always going to be in the mix. And, you know, they're without their best player. I mean, they lost Clayton Kershaw, who, it's a shame because, again, another guy you have to enjoy watching as a baseball fan, probably one of the best pitchers I've ever seen. And he's out, and they don't know when he's coming back, which is tough for them to lose a guy like him, but they're still competing, which is a pretty impressive feat. If you ever want to watch a great young baseball player, watch their shortstop, Corey Seager, who reminds me of a young left-handed hitting Cal Ripken. That kid can really hit the ball. He's got that kind of build like Ripken has. Obviously, you know, you're going to compare him to the amazing things that Cal Ripken did, but watch Corey Seager play baseball. He's a really, really good ball player. So we'll see what happens to the Mets, folks, before we move on to the Yankees. All I have to say now is one other thing that scared the you-know-what out of me was the Philadelphia Phillies have only 6 less wins than the New York Mets. Who would have thought we'd be saying that on July 31st? So Let's move over to the Bronx and talk about the New York Yankees. Again, folks, you want to call in and talk, 631-888-8811 is the number here. Feel free to call in. Let's talk about the Yankees. Yeah, boy, I thought the Mets offense stunk, and now I look at the Yankees offense. And when you look at the Yankees offense outside of Carlos Beltran, boy, there are some challenges there. After Beltran and Gregorius, you're down to Ellsbury, Castro and company. Yeah, it's a challenge for them. I think that, listen, I called it on my first show. I thought Cashman should sell, and he's done that, right? He has moved Chapman, got a great prospect. He's moved now Andrew Miller today. You know, you hear the rumors. McCann could be going. Beltran could be going. I mean, if he can find, a pack of cigarettes for Teixeira and Averon, I'm sure he'd take it. But I think, listen, the Yankee ownership, I mean, the dad isn't there anymore, the boss. The sons, I think, have a different approach. You know, they are doing the right thing in rebuilding the team because that's how you have to win. So I think at the end of the day, I think the Yankees are doing the right thing. I think we have a call coming in. Joe from Belmore, you're on with Paul Spiteri, Sports Talk 1240.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Joe?
Good. I just want to see what you thought about the Yankees trade with the Indians with Andrew Miller, letting them go.
Listen, I think the Yankees did the right thing. I think they saw that they weren't going to compete probably, for a title this year or maybe even for a wild card. They apparently brought in a kid, Frazier, as one of the top prospects in the Indians organization, and he's an outfield that the Yankees could use. And I think that, when you look at a bullpen, they still have a closer with Dellin Betances, so he'll go into that role. They picked up Tyler Clipper today, who I have in one of my fantasy teams. I've struggled watching him lately. But listen, I think that Cashman and the ownership are doing the right thing, Joe. What do you think?
Well, my question would be, from Miller, where are they going from here? Is it Beltran going away? Are they looking to trade Gardner? What's going on there?
I think they're going to try to trade everything that they have. If you've made the moves to trade, listen, their whole team was predicated on that bullpen, right? They talked about the three big guys in the back. Two of them are gone. So clearly, Cashman said, hey, listen, I'm not looking to fold the tent. But when you trade the two of the three guys that you really were relying on to win baseball games, I think that Cashman would be burning up the phone for the next 24 hours trying to move the other assets. And listen, Carlos Beltran's a free agent, right? He's 40 years old. If you can get some for him, why not? And, I think he's going to try to move as many guys as he can.
Okay, but what would you get for Beltran? Are you going to get much?
Well, I mean, listen. First of all, you're going to lose him, right? So it's good to get something rather than nothing, right? You're not going to re-sign the guy at his age, and plus you're in a team that's in transition. I think, the Yankees, when you look at their young talent, they have a great catcher in Sanchez. They now picked up an outfielder in Frazier. They have the big kid hitting out Aaron Judge in the outfield. So now you're building up some outfield depth. Look around the rest of the diamond. Greg Bird will come back. He could be playing first base for you next year. I mean, listen, the other thing is pitching, right? I mean, the Yankees need pitching. You look at their rotation, there's not a lot of guys that you're going to be going next year. Wow, I'm really going. Right now, who are you going to season next with? CC Sabathia again? And Nathan Eovaldi? I mean, Nathan Eovaldi could be gone. Pineda's not reliable. So to me, if I'm the Yankees, they picked up some pitchers today. I don't know much about them. But to me, the more pitching depth you have, the better off you'd be, and I could see them doing some of that. But they've plugged some holes around the diamond with some of these deals, so kudos to Cash.
So that leads me to my next question is, pitching-wise, who are we getting rid of? Because, Tanaka is great, but I'd love to move him. The guy's got the innings on the arm.
I said that last show. I think he's an absolute – I think that's a great point, and I think he would be a great guy to move because he's the type of guy – if you're a contender – he knows how to pitch. He's pitched a lot of big games in New York and Japan. His name isn't mentioned, but it wouldn't be something else if they moved him by the end of tomorrow. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I love Eovaldi. I get rid of him too, though. And Pineda.
Well, it sounds like you got the big broom out, huh? You're at a clean house.
Well, the one person I keep is Nova.
Yeah, you got to have somebody to pitch next year, right? So I think you need to keep, I think you got him, you got Severino, maybe he turns it around. But listen, I think you're in a little bit of a transition phase for the New York Yankees. I would not be shocked if they're not going and, spending a hell of a lot of money in the offseason. And listen, 3 years ago, maybe two, right, you looked at the Houston Astros and everyone was laughing, right? They were awful. But behind the scenes, they had number one pick after number one pick. They kept building the team. Look at how good that roster is now. They have an offense that would, if they stay together, can be absolutely lethal for the next 5 years or longer. right? The Marlins. People laughing at the Marlins, right? I listen, most teams right now would trade their entire outfield to have the Marlins outfield of Yelich, Stanton, and Ozuna. So, you know what? It could turn around in a couple of years by doing the right thing, and I think Cashman's thinking that way personally.
I agree. Thanks, Paul. Have a good night.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for calling in, man. So, again, back, you know, to Joe, I think he made some good points. I talked about Tanaka, too. And listen, how about Brian McCann? Brian McCann, you know, I think Brian McCann's a great catcher, right? I mean, from an offensive perspective, not a high average guy, but, you know, he's hit the ball for power in the past. He's probably a great locker room guy from what you hear. You know, I think all the Yankees are in play tomorrow. I think, listen, at the end of the day, you know, they've made two big trades. I think people are a little surprised by Miller this morning. But I think Cashman will try to make deals. He won't try to make stupid deals. And keep in mind, guys, if you're not getting what you want by the trade deadline, doesn't mean that the Yankees aren't, you know, trying to make these type of moves in the offseason, right? So you have the whole offseason. If you're in the mindset where, you know what, I might want to retrench and rebuild a little bit, a lot of guys could be up for play in the offseason as well. Yeah, but when you look at the Yankees, I mean, you know, it really is kind of scary. You look at some of the offense, you know, with Castro, who's really, you know, he's hitting what you thought he would, 250. Gardner slipped. Chase Headley, oh, he's had a great comeback, you know, since the first half. He's still hitting 250. I mean, there's a lot of problems in the offense. It's kind of scary when you look at the two teams combined who are about to play in a Subway Series, and it might be one of the most melodramatic of them all. But just before I wrap up on baseball, when I look at the American League, you know, I'm a real big fan of the Cleveland Indians. And, you know, look, Luke Roy said no to them, which surprised me. But listen, who knows what the personal issue he had, or there's some financial things involved. I mean, he plays in Milwaukee. Cleveland isn't really that much of a difference. You know, I've been to both places. But, you know, I look at Cleveland. They have great starting pitching. Carrasco. They have Salazar, Kluber. Those three guys can beat anybody. They've had a great comeback from Bauer. They have some offense. Lindor, Kipnis, and Napoli all hitting. You know, they're a team to worry about. I think the Texas Rangers are a very good baseball team who they might be looking at. Luke Roy just read before going on the air. They could be something to worry about. You obviously got Toronto can hit. Boston can hit. You know, I think Boston made some moves, get Pomeranz. So, yeah, I think Pomeranz was pitching a little over his head this year. He's been kind of bounced around a little bit already since he's been to Boston. So I wonder about how good he can be. But obviously the Red Sox have an offense where if they hit, they can really knock anyone out. So I think that you really have some interesting competition in the American League. You know, Baltimore just picked up Wade Miley. Yeah, I would say big deal. If you ever want to look at Wade Miley, take a look at some of his stats the last couple of years. That shouldn't excite you, especially pitching in Baltimore. I think from the wild card perspective, I think Houston's going to be in there. Detroit, you know, Detroit's very savvy at making moves. I think they got a great offense. J.D. Martinez coming back potentially tomorrow. And Seattle's kind of looming around, right? So I think when you look at the American League, you know, there's some pretty good ball clubs in there. And I would love to see, personally, folks, the Cubs and the Indians in the World Series. I think that would be fantastic for baseball. I think Bob Uecker should come back and announce those games. It would be hysterical, and he can get drunk in the middle of it and pretend he's doing the Major League movies. I think it would be fantastic to see that. I personally think you're going to see the Cubs and the Texas Rangers. I think the Rangers know how to make good moves. They're going to probably do some things by the end of tomorrow. They need some pitching outside of Cole Hamels. If Darvish is healthy, they can be okay, but they have a lot of offense and a lot of good, young, exciting baseball players. I see Cubs and Texas, and you know what, folks? But the call tonight, I think the Chicago Cubs are going to break the hex and win the World Series. So moving on, we have a break in a couple of minutes, but from a trade deadline perspective, then we'll switch over to football and bring Carl Mecklenburg on in a couple of minutes. Yeah, I think we'll see a couple of names move tomorrow. I think you'll see Jay Bruce moved. I think Luke Roy will go somewhere. Sleeper guy is going, Chris Sale. You know, obviously I think him doing that uniform cut-up was him begging to get the hell out of Chicago. Evan Longoria, maybe. Who knows if Tampa can get a lot for him. And maybe Cargo from Colorado. And the Rockies been playing better. You could see Cargo on the move. But we'll see by tomorrow. Okay, so folks, let's talk a little football before we get moving. And listen, for all you Jet fans, I'm happy that you're happy. Ryan Fitzpatrick's in. I mean, I've already tried to take orders for Super Bowl tickets. I you know, you would think that the Jet fans have hit the lotto. But Jet fans, I'm going to give you two sets of numbers. I'm going to explain to you what these numbers mean. The first number is 41 and 37. And the second number is 43 and 61. So what's the magic in those numbers? 41 and 37 is Mark Sanchez's all-time one-loss record. 43 and 61 is Ryan Fitzpatrick. Listen, Ryan Fitzpatrick's better than Geno Smith, no doubt about it. I'm happy you guys got him, but I still think the Jets are an 8 and 8, maybe a 9 and 7 team. So, listen, I think it's great for the franchise to get excited. I think McGannon really is interesting about the GM, Mac, because he interesting negotiating tactics. I think at the end of the day, he pulled off a nice move with Fitzpatrick, but he also took to the end to get Darren Lee signed, which was interesting, right? Because most of these rookie contracts are pretty much set in stone. He also, kind of played hardball with a couple of other deals. Obviously, he got Mo Wilkerson done, which nobody suspected. So he's an interesting negotiator. Something to watch, I think, as you get over time. Okay, we have one more call before the break. Mike from Belmore, you're on with Paul Spiteri on Sports Talk 1240. Mike, are you there?
Yes, Paul, I'm here. How are you?
I'm doing well. Turn your radio down.
I'm trying.
I always wanted to say that.
I'm here.
What's
so,
up?
Do you think Geno Smith would have been a better choice or Fitzpatrick for the Jets this year?
I think Geno Smith is doing the right thing now by he'll be holding a clipboard wearing a raincoat during most of the games. I'm not a fan of Geno Smith. I actually wasn't a fan of him in college. I watched him a lot when he played for West Virginia. I think Fitzpatrick's better. I think he'll cause you less harm by throwing picks. But, listen, I still think they're both okay quarterbacks. Fitzpatrick clearly the better choice.
All right, so you think Fitzpatrick holding out was a good move for him or a good move for the Jets?
Well, I think it was good for both, right, because he got a $12 million deal, which is, millions more than he's made recently. He has a year to prove himself, so if he has an absolutely fantastic year, he'll get paid. I mean, God, look at what Brock Osweiler got from Houston after starting seven games. If Fitzpatrick has a tremendous year, brings the Jets deep into the playoffs, he'll absolutely get a huge contract next year, either from the Jets or somewhere else. And if he fails, the Jets drafted Hackenberg. Geno will probably be gone by then. You still have Bryce Petty around. Or the Jets go back and they start to develop one of these young quarterbacks and Fitzpatrick gets cut. So I think for Fitzpatrick, he's put himself in a great position to have a great year and then get himself paid next year. And he's, listen, still making $12 million this year. Nobody's gonna be running a charity event for him anytime soon.
So where do you see the Jets finishing this year? In front of Denver or no?
In front of Denver, I mean, that would be the first time since the Stone Age. But no, I think the Jets are a 8-8 team. I mean, I look at their schedule, right? I think you got some tough games in the beginning: Cincinnati, Buffalo, the Chiefs, Seattle, Pittsburgh, Arizona. I think the Jets are fortunate to be in a division where two teams are, I think, on par or worse than them. I'm not a big fan of the Dolphins or a big fan of the Bills. I think clearly New England's still the cream of the division. If New England struggles without Brady, the Jets can win some of these tough games in the front. Maybe they make noise, but I don't see them as a playoff team. I'm sorry. I just think that they have some holes on offense still. I think that Forte's a great running back. But after Decker and Marshall, they really have no receiving depth. One injury to one of those guys, Jets offense is in a lot of trouble. Don't forget that.
All right, Paul, it was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Mike. Have a good night. And to talk, so just to kind of wrap up on the Jets, listen, I'm obviously not positive on the Jets this year. I think there is some talent there, but I do think they're going to struggle to really get out of these first six games. I really see, Cincinnati at home. I mean, those are the type of games that Jets should win. They usually win their home opener. Cincinnati is not a bad football team. They have a huge chip on their shoulder after last year. And the Jets got, Buffalo and, Rex Ryan can do. Then you got really four absolutely tough football games. The Chiefs, the Seahawks, the Steelers, and Arizona. Those are good football teams. So if the Jets split the first two, they have to at least split those next. If they can come out of 3-3, I think they'd be in great shape. I personally think they're coming out of these first six, 2-4. And I think after that, you got some games that are winnable: Baltimore, Cleveland, Miami, the Rams. But then, it gets a little tougher. You got the Pats, the Colts. The Niners aren't terrible, but then Miami, the Pats, and the Bills. So, listen, I think at the end of the day, they are in the middle of the pack, but you never know what can happen. I do think Matt Forte is a good football player at running back, but I am worried about the Jets' depth at wide receiver. If Marshall or Decker go down, they have a lot of problems. Their third wide receiver, I couldn't even tell you who it is, and they have no tight end that's emerged. Those are real issues, guys, on offense. Remember, with the NFL, injuries are so unbelievably important. We all know that, and it critical guy or two goes down, we don't have depth that can really hurt your football team, especially at wide receiver. And we look at the Giants. Well, we'll talk about the Giants maybe after the break. It's time for a break. We'll be right back with Carl Mecklenburg.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Everybody, welcome back to Sports Talk 1240. I'm your host, Paul Spiteri, and I'd like to welcome my guest tonight, coming from Colorado, Carl Mecklenburg. Carl, how are you?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's a dream come true to interview someone like you for me, Carl. I was a kid growing up in Queens, New York. I don't know if you ever made your way to Queens, Carl. Probably not. And I rooted for the Broncos since I was a little kid, and people are like, why are you rooting for that team? And this is the back when there was no internet, you know, no DirecTV, and I watched from the Craig Morton days till the days when you came and John Elway, and it was, you know, great to watch, you know, the success, especially when you joined, you know, back in 83 and the team really took off. So thank you so much for joining my show tonight.
Well, I appreciate it.
So, Carl, a little bit of everyone for the background on Carl. So Carl played his entire career, 83 to 94 as a Denver Bronco, six-time Pro Bowler. Played in three Super Bowls, member of the Broncos' Ring of Fame, and, of course, one of my favorite nicknames, Carl, the Snow Goose. Was that where'd that come from?
Well, it came from college. it's a story that needn't be told.
Well, the other one, Carl, was the albino.
Following me around.
The albino rhino? I thought the Snow Goose was better.
Yeah, you know what? I got called a lot of things. It was fun to have those nicknames and have people, you know, cheer me on and follow me however they wanted to.
So, Carl, tell me, what are you up to today?
I'm a speaker. I get to travel the country. I do about 40 speeches a year, corporate and association meetings, and get to perform without getting injured. It works out really well.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a lot easier than playing the NFL for 11 years. Carl, was interesting. A couple of things I think that are fascinating when you look back, right? When you were drafted in the 12th round, right? That's five rounds later than exists today, right? That you were the 310th pick in the draft. You made six Pro Bowls. Tell me, when you get drafted, right? I mean, today you'd be an unsigned free agent, right? Probably shopping around looking for a team. But you get picked in the 12th round. Tell me, was it during your first camp? When did you think you had a shot at making the NFL roster that year?
Well, you know, I didn't really understand that much about pro football. I loved playing college football. I figured the Broncos drafted me; they wanted me there. I came out, worked hard. You know, I was a 240 pound nose guard. they don't make it in the NFL.
You'd be a fullback today.
Exactly. I played at defensive tackle for a while. I tore a ligament in my elbow. They moved me out to defensive end. In the first preseason game, we're playing against Seattle. Somehow I got matched up against Seattle's starter. It was the third quarter. I don't know what. I guess the guy was getting punished or something. He got left in. And I made a couple sacks. Had one of them was a strip sack, and we recovered it. At the end of the game, Elway was named offensive player of the game, and I was named defensive player of the game. And I figured I made it at that point. But it was, if you can rush the passer, and this is something my college coach told me, if you can rush the passer, there's a place for you in the NFL. And that's how I made the team as a pass rusher. It wasn't until my third year in the NFL that they gave me an opportunity to switch positions and start playing linebacker.
That's it. Well, if you look at what number 58 just got paid, Carl, for rushing the passer, that kind of makes you wish you would go to time capsule and play today, huh?
Yeah. I was born a little bit too late.
So, Carl, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I was the first middle linebacker to make $1 million a year. I was right on the cusp of when the salaries really took off. I was the highest paid for 4 days. I was there, darn it.
Yeah, well, at least, right? I mean, that's amazing when you look at the money today. But listen, guys like, Von Miller really deserved, to me, the contract because he's such an integral part of that team.
He really is. What an awesome kid and player. A lot of guys who are that gifted athletically don't work on the rest of their game. Yeah. I mean, it would be really easy for him to just make a living as a pass rusher and not work on everything else, but he's become a very good coverage guy. Had a very important interception against New England in the playoffs. Also great against the run. A lot, guys like Derek Thomas that played in my day. Yeah. I mean, it was check 58. We're running right at him, man, whenever we could. You don't want to do that with Vaughn. Vaughn will play the run just as well as he will the pass.
Yeah, he's really matured, I think, as a ball player. Carl, tell me a bit about when you played, right? You played mostly for Dan Reeves, right? And a little bit for, now coordinator Wade Phillips. What was it like playing for those guys? What do you remember?
Great guys, first of all, and very committed to the team concept, being able to come together and play as a unit. And that, I think, it's lost a lot of time in today's world of fantasy football and how many points can we score and all that kind of stuff. But it comes down, and the Broncos were a great example of that. It comes down to the team playing well, and whether it's the defense that makes the big player, the offense, or the special teams, whatever. Somebody comes through, and you make some plays, and you win the game when it's time to win the game. Dan Reeves was gonna run the ball. Gary Kubiak is the same kind of coach. If there's any question about what we need to do on the field, they're gonna be running the ball, and that to me has really trickled down through Bronco history. That even though there's been great quarterbacking, it really comes down to the offensive line running the ball, playing some solid defense, and good special teams. And if you win two out of three of those, you win the game more often than not.
Yeah, I mean, and no better example than last year. Because one thing I have to ask you about, obviously, based here in New York, right, Super Bowl 21. I still remember that game, like it was yesterday. You guys outplayed the Giants in the first half. Many of my Giant friends disagree with me, but the Broncos really, to me, you played so well in that first half. You had some chances to score. Carlos missed a field goal. Yeah, the first and goal and the one, couldn't get it any points. What was it like in the locker room? It was 10-9, and then obviously, what I don't know what happened to Phil Simms the second half. But when you were in the locker room that game, and you really, I thought you guys played great. What were you feeling like going in? And then at the end of that game, or in the middle of that second half, what do you think turned it?
Well, I know what turned it. We had a tendency at the time to overplay your tendencies as a team. If your offense had solid tendencies, and the Giants did at that point, I mean, first and 10, they were going to run the ball, 95% of the time. Second and 5 or more, they were going to pass. 5 or less, they were going to run. I mean, it was solid all the way through the season, all the way through the playoffs. There was no question. We knew what you were going to do. And it played out that way in the first half. Parcells understood what we were doing defensively, and any time you overload one thing, you're giving up something else. And they just switched it around. They were passing on first and 10, and we were all up on the line of scrimmage playing the run. They were running the ball on third and long, and they caught us by surprise and took advantage of what we gave them. So that was the issue in that game as far as I'm concerned. I don't know what happened on the offensive side. I can only speak to the defensive side, and that's what that was going on.
Yeah. Carl, tell me about, so as I'm kind of moving from your career, you know, more to modern. So what are the games stick out in your mind that were great to be part of? Right, you played some very, you know, exciting football games, right, as a Denver Bronco. Anything that sticks out in your mind?
Yeah, you know, obviously the drive game in Cleveland, the fumble game, both were huge games for us to win AFC championships and have a chance to play in the Super Bowl. That was those were dreams come true, and to go into Cleveland and win that first championship game the way we did was pretty special, because it was us against the world down there, Paul. Oh, yeah. They drove around our hotel all night long, honking their horns and barking, trying to keep us awake. The dog bones were like 8 inches deep on our sidelines. The equipment manager brought a bunch home in garbage bags. I brought them home to my dogs.
So. Hey, Carl, that field looked like you were playing on concrete at the end of that game.
Oh, it was crazy. I mean, it was already before the game started. There was the turf was completely frozen. You could see the tracks from the last game from the other players, from the cleats, on the field. It was definitely the mistake by the lake down there. And to play with such a hostile crowd, such a great team. I mean, Cleveland was dominant that year, and to come out of there with a win the way we won it was amazing. Yeah, I got one thing. I got a granddaughter whose birthday it is today, Elizabeth. She's listening today. She just turned 14, and happy birthday, LB.
Happy birthday. And, Carl, your birthday's coming up the same as my wife, September 1st, I think.
Yeah,
coming up soon. Carl, tell me a bit about the type of teammate and leader John Elway was.
You know, John was special. John, and he still is. I mean, the guy is as competitive a human being as I've ever met. That's probably why he and Dan Reeves didn't get along.
They were both
the same, just hard guys that wanted to win more than anything. We knew as a defense, as long as we kept it close, we had a chance to win. You know, and John gets the credit for all those comebacks, but we had to let the other team get ahead first.
So maybe you and Louie Wright and some of the guys out in the secondary and Dennis Smith, right, your buddies, certainly gave him a chance to come back.
Yeah, Dan will let him pass if we're behind.
Carl, I'm going to switch a little bit more of a serious topic, and I want to ask you your honest opinion, right? So you've been on record about the concussions, right, Carl? You said you played with a lot of serious concussions, right? And this is obviously well-documented, right? This is nothing, you know, that you know is being spoken about for the first time. Two questions. Tell me a bit about what that was like and what you would do differently. And secondly, right, I have a son who's 11 years old, about to be 12, would love to play football, but you know, my wife and I are, you know, it's a hard thing to, you know, say, hey, listen, he's not a big kid, but he wants to play, and obviously a lot of kids play. But tell me two things. You know, when you look back at what you experienced, would you do it again? And secondly, if you were me and you had a kid that age thinking about playing football, what would you tell him?
Yeah, I loved playing the game, and I would certainly do it again. I like the fact that football is safer than it's ever been. If you have a concussion now, they treat it like an injury. Yeah. They treat it with respect. They set you down. They make sure you're ready before they put you back in. When I was playing, you'd come to the sidelines, and the trainer would hold up two fingers and say, how many fingers? And you know it's always two, so you say two, and you go back in. I mean, that just was it. It was the same as, you know, I hurt my knee. If I'm not as good as my backup playing with a hurt knee, then fine, replace me. But I'm going to play until you determine as a coaching staff that my backup is doing better than I am. So to me, that's the way it was. And as far as allowing kids to play, I tell young mothers and fathers this all the time. If you have a child like I was, who was going to run into things with his head anyway, you might as well have a helmet on and some supervision. The fact of the matter is, once again, the game is safer than it's ever been, and that comes from the lawsuit the Players Association filed against the league, and the league, had to start treating concussions the right way, and that's trickled down all the way to Pop Warner football, all the way through high school, college. It's a completely different thing.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic. Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, it's America's game now, right? And I'm glad that the NFL has responded to people like yourself and seeing some of the tragic things that happened, like Junior Seau and whatnot. And, you know, to protect the great brand that they've built, I think it's great what they're doing. And, you know, clearly things have evolved, right, for the better. Carl, we'll talk a bit about, let's switch to more modern stuff and talk about, you know, current football. So the Broncos are defending Super Bowl champions, right? That's really an interesting season, though, Carl, last year, right? When you watch them, I mean, obviously I watched them and, you know, you're there a heck of a lot closer than me. It was a strange season, right? Obviously what happened to Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler. But, you know, when you looked at the team, I always thought the defense was playing well. They had a lot of injury. You know, the safeties were hurt a lot, and I always was concerned that if they weren't getting Ward and Stewart back, they were really in trouble. And whenever they had trouble, like against Pittsburgh late in the season, you know, those guys were out. When did you think, though, when you what was it in the playoffs? Was it before that? You said, you know, this team may be special, but no one knows it yet.
You know, when you win 13 games in a season, and you win seven of them in the fourth quarter, that shows grit. That shows the team coming together, individuals making big plays when it's time to make big plays, and that's the mark of great teams. It's not blowing somebody out 31-7. And we'd seen that here in Colorado with Peyton early on when he was here. But it's winning those gritty games and stepping up when it's time to step up and making the plays. And if you can do that, more than likely when you get in the playoffs, you're going to have one of those gritty games. And it's going to be a big play by somebody you don't expect it from. And that's what we saw. I mean, the Broncos were the type of team that John Elway wanted them to be. I mean, when they lost in the Super Bowl 2 years earlier, John was upset. I mean, he fired the coaching staff. He said he wanted this team to go down kicking and screaming.
Yeah,
and that's what he got. He got a group of guys that will do whatever it takes to win a football game. And you can't oversell that. That is more important than individual talent, than statistics, than fantasy football points, than anything else. I mean, they came together and held each other up and played some great football all through the playoffs and through the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, I agree. They were beaten up in that Super Bowl at Seattle. I mean, they were. It was tough to watch because it's such a great season offensively, but it looked like they were being bullied by the Seahawks. I mean, the receivers, you know, with their drag routes and the pick plays. I mean, they were just. I mean, it felt like Seattle said, "Hey, listen, like you remember how you mentioned you knew kind of what the Giants were doing for the half." Seattle walked into that game saying, "We know what you're going to do," and they literally punched them in the mouth for four quarters. And you're right. I think what Elway did was say, listen, defense wins Super Bowls. I'm going to transform this team, even with Peyton Manning at quarterback, and clearly it paid off last year. And I think, you know, the NFL is a copycat league, Carl, right? I think you're going to keep seeing teams follow that blueprint and try to get tough on defense because that's what's won Super Bowls. And it's won, you know, two of the last three, and arguably Seattle was, you know, inches away from winning two in a row. So it'll be interesting to see what goes on. Now, this year, Carl, going into the season, clearly, you know, it's a transitional season, right? Because obviously 18 is retired. So from a quarterback perspective, you know, how's Coach Kubiak feeling with what he's got now with Sanchez, Simeon, and Lynch?
He has options. They don't know yet. Lynch doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's a rookie. Sanchez just got started in this system. Is figuring his way out through it and just picking up the, you know, it's like going all of a sudden you speak English and they're telling you, okay, we're gonna do this in French, and you got to figure it out on the fly while people are running at you. So it takes a while to adjust to a new terminology, a new system. Trevor Siemian has been steady. He was in it last year. He was the third string player last year. And at this point, looks like he's the best quarterback. But you know, as time goes by, and the other guys pick up the system and learn, you know, learn the receivers and figure things out, it'll get tighter. And who knows?
Okay, so one more question about the team, the defense, right? We're losing Malik Jackson and Danny Trevathan, obviously two important guys. But tell me what you think, how the defense will do, and you think there's a player that will emerge to kind of step up and fill the void of those two great guys that they lost.
You know, Danny Trevathan has played about, and you know, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I would say about half the games that he's been on the team. He's he's been injured and injured and injured. And, you know, he had a dislocated kneecap, and then he had some sort of ankle or hip problem too. He's had a shoulder problem. He's had a lot of issues. So they've done without him. Brandon Marshall has stepped up and played very well in his place. And then alongside of him last year, the Broncos gave him a nice contract extension, and he's going to be around. He's the guy they're counting on to replace Danny Trevathan and kind of be the head guy, the signal caller, the captain of the defense. You know, and as far as Malik Jackson goes, the Broncos have since Wade Phillips came over here, they've just rotated defensive linemen. You know, throughout every game, they don't have somebody who's necessarily the starter or the backup. They're just rotating guys through constantly and just wearing the offensive line out from the other team. So obviously Malik was a big part of that rotation, but they've got guys who have playing experience and guys that can step up and fill that role. So hopefully they'll still be able to play the run the way they have. You know, in the last couple years, and losing two guys up the middle is tough, but they've played without them, like I said, the last couple years, so it shouldn't be a big problem.
Great. So, Carl, before we wrap up, I like to, with my guests, kind of do like a bunch of lightning round, quick questions, and kind of fire off a few at you and give me as quick answers as you can. Let's see if we get the memory going, right? What player did you play against that scared the heck out of you? Like, oh, my God, it's a tough to stop this guy. I can't tackle this tough guy.
You know, it wasn't the tough guys, the big, strong guys. It was the little, quick guys. Barry Sanders. My job when we played those guys was I'd line up over the nose, over the center, and I was supposed to jump around either side of him and take a shot at Barry. And you know he's not going to be where he is right then. He's either going to be to the left or the right, so you pick one and you take a shot and hope you got your hands on him. And the next guy would do the same thing, and you know, you try to get him down. But Barry Sanders was just electric.
Tell me, what quarterback did you play against that you knew you can consistently beat, that you kind of had his number?
Wow. You know, we played Kansas City twice a year, and Todd Blackledge was their quarterback. He was drafted the same year Elway was. And he had this habit of holding the ball until you hit him.
So, your type of quarterback.
he was my favorite.
Any opposing coaches that you didn't like on a personal, professional level that maybe were just real SOBs and you wanted to kick his team's ass? Any of them come to your mind?
You know, San Francisco's offensive line coach, and I, for the life of me, I don't remember his name, He taught their guys to leg whip and cheap shot. I got cartilage torn in both my knees on an obviously coached cheap shot from one of their guards that came from the sideline. So to me, that was the guy.
Tell me, who's the biggest trash talker you ever played against?
I played with him, Shannon Sharp.
I love Shannon Sharp, but boy, that's funny. You picked a guy on your own team. Tell me the toughest offensive lineman to beat that you remember playing against.
Yeah, you know, John Hanna, Hanna from New England was unbelievable. He would they'd run that student body sweep and he'd pull out there and usually can hide behind the defensive lineman and they won't find you, but he'd find you and then he'd do bad things to you. So I'd have to say John Hanna.
It's an AM radio station. I'd love to tell me some of the things you used to hear on the bottom of a pile, but that's probably for a podcast off the air. Tell me, Carl, who was your favorite teammate on and off the field as a Bronco? Who'd you just love playing with?
You know, there's a bunch of guys.
You can give me a few. I'm sure there's. I know.
Yeah, Rulon Jones, Jim Ryan, Greg Cragen. You know, those were guys. Simon Fletcher.
Those were guys that
I went to battle with and could count on and rely on day in, day out. Wonderful human beings.
Tell me, where did you hate going to play on the road?
I didn't like playing in Philadelphia. The turf was horrible. The fans were nasty. It was tough playing.
Something's never changed.
I never looked forward to that. And it only happened a couple of times in my career. Yeah.
I thought maybe you might say Oakland, because that's certainly an interesting
place. I loved playing in Oakland. It was like Christmas morning when we were going to play Oakland Raiders. They would not hide anything. I mean, wherever Todd Christensen lined up, they were going to run the other way because he couldn't block. It was obvious. They just thought they were meaner and badder than you, and it was just a knockdown, drag-out brawl, and I liked that.
That's great. Where's your favorite place to go play on the road?
I like playing in Kansas City. I like their turf. I great fans. I mean, just as educated of fans as you ever want to see, they actually would congratulate you on making a good play, but but they wanted their people, they wanted to win so bad, and wonderful folks in Kansas City.
Tell me, who do you think wins the Super Bowl this year?
I think the Denver Broncos are going to repeat.
That's music to my ears. Well, I have to ask you why.
Why? If the other team doesn't score and you take the ball away, you got a good chance to win.
Oh, that's great. Carl, listen, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It was great to have you. Thank you, obviously, for the Twitter chat as well. I hope you enjoyed being on. It's great to have you. Hopefully fans here in New York got to hear some of these things. And really, thank you so much for coming. Hopefully we can have you on maybe during the season. And we could talk about, you know, how things are progressing out there in the AFC West and see where we go from there.
Appreciate it, Paul. You take care.
Thanks, Carl. Have a good night. Thank you, Carl. So everyone, that was Carl Mecklenburg from calling us from Colorado. It's great to have Carl. Some interesting insights. Funny mentioning how hard it was to tackle Barry Sanders. There's no surprise there. We actually have a call. We have, before we wrap up, Mike from Wantagh. You're on. Mike from Wantagh, you're on. Turn your radio down.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Mike?
Big Giants fan here. Just want to see how you think they're going to do in the NFC East with the, revamped defense.
Well, I think, because I didn't get to the Giants today. I think the Giants are a good football team. I think they'll have a absolute chance of making the playoffs. You got a lot of new chips on defense. I think at the end of the day, it's going to be important how that team gels. I think Vernon was a great signing. I think Snacks Harrison in the middle obviously can make plays. Yeah, Janoris Jenkins, I've watched him. He's a hit or miss guy. He gets beat a little bit, but
he takes plays off.
Yeah, he's all type of guy that can win you a game with a pick six. You know, apparently Eli Apple, from your reading from what Cromartie said, is playing really well, and they might move Cromartie to the slot. Listen, I think the Giants are in a division that they can win, but they have, you know, I think the Eagles stink, but I think the Cowboys, if they're healthy, are a tough out, even though their defense could be absolutely dreadful, and Washington's a decent team. I think the Giants have the makings of the playoffs. I do think the NFC's got some tough teams, though. I mean, let's not discount Green Bay. I think Minnesota is the team that I'm really watching in the NFC, and the Giants play them week four. That should be a great football game on a Monday night. I still think the Panthers are a good team, a lot of offense. And over in the West, you know, you can't knock Seattle out, and you certainly can't knock those Cardinals out, because the Cardinals are another good football team.
So what's your win total for the Giants this year? Do you give them 9? You give them 10, 11 wins?
I like the Giants to win 10. I think the Giants are a 10-6 team if they stay healthy. I think that the key for the Giants
is that a division win, though?
I think they're there with the Redskins. I think the Redskins are going to be there with them. I could see coming down to the two of them. So I would say that last game on New Year's Day, on January 1st, at Washington, could decide the division.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Have a good night.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for calling in. So, folks, again, let me get to wrap up. About 2 minutes left here. I want to thank, again, Carl Mecklenburg for calling in. It was a great half hour with him. Thanks to my callers from Wantagh. So just to kind of wrap up, I want to also mention my sponsor. Guys, for all your transportation needs, please call CJA Luxury Transportation. Airports, trips into the city, trips to the wineries, all luxury vehicles at taxicab prices. Please call Craig at 516-557-7991. Again, CJA Luxury Transportation. Call Craig 516-557-7991. You also see his Facebook page, CJA Luxury Transportation. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. Thank you, Brian, for working the phones and the board for me, and to Rob Cole for producing Sports Talk and all the things that Rob does on Twitter and for the website. We'll be back with two more shows August 7th. Join me with Howard Cross from the New York Football Giants. Will be joining me on August 7th. He does a sideline reporting. He was a great Giant football player. We'll talk baseball, football camps, maybe dabble in a little bit of fantasy football. Everybody, thank you for joining me. And please welcome next at 9 o'clock hour, Ray Mora. I'll be hosting us from 9 to 10 on Sports Talk 1240. Good night, everybody.
expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.